All right, I will call to order this meeting of the Illinois State Toll Highway Authority Customer Service Committee. Roll call, please.
Director Reddick.
Here.
Director Towns.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Very good, thank you very much. No public comment?
Nope.
Okay, just a few things under Chairman's notes. I guess first I would take a motion to approve the November 8, 2012 Customer Service Committee meeting minutes.
So moved.
There's a motion, I'll second that. Marlene, thanks for stepping in and picking up on that one. That was prior to your tenure and helping us out. Mm-hmm. Are there any additions, deletions, changes, or amendments? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval as submitted signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Those pass. I'll take a motion for approval of the Customer Service Committee meeting minutes of January 17, 2013.
So moved.
Second. Are there any additions, deletions, changes, or amendments? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval as submitted signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Those are passed as submitted. Thank you very much. On the agenda, we've noted customer service improvements. This is just, I wanted to update the committee and provide a little bit of background. At the last meeting in January, as you'll remember, Chair Wolf was here and had passed along an experience that she had had down in the customer service center. And since that time, working with staff, we've put together some changes that we're implementing down there. And just to highlight a few of those, number one, we're improving the communication of ADA accommodations for our customers that are coming in. There's a separate line for iPass replenishment only for those that are coming in with less significant and detailed issues to allow them to move along a little bit quicker. And then these next few things, I really think are what we were dealing with was a bit of a perception problem. Based on what we saw, you know, the people were coming in and perhaps didn't understand the full operation. And so understanding that perception to some extent becomes reality, made a few changes where we've got a customer service window for processing large iPass settlements, a dedicated window for that. Those were previously handled in the back room so that we, you know, people see what's going on and that we've got people there dealing with these issues. Updated signage where there's windows closed to help customers understand that we've moved on, that there's reconciliation going on and that there is activity so that there wasn't, you know, there's not this perception that people have just disappeared. And closing out of transactions are taking place in the front of the window rather than completing that task in the back so that the operations are going that are out open in the center there. I think these are going to be valuable steps to move forward past some of the issues that we have, and then and we'll follow up with staff at this point to see the improvements and see how that's going along. So, is there any questions? All right.
All this stuff.
Executive Director,
who is not here today. Shauna Whitehead, our Chief of Business Systems, will be giving a recap of the work plan and going over the various items that the committee has designated as priorities to consider, including some of the recent issues that have been raised. So, that, Shauna.
Good afternoon, I guess I should say. thanks so much for taking the time to be here. I'm excited to go over a lot of these things that I know we've been working on together these past months. The second slide of this just shows the key topics that we'll cover. We'll talk through some of the violation framework stuff that we've done. I know that we made some good headway in January, but there are some follow-ups that we need to wrap up on. We'll talk a little bit about fleet policies. We'll talk about the Indiana toll concession fee, which I know is on everyone's mind. We already actually talked about the in-person customer service improvements, so I don't think we need to readdress that, but after that, we'll want to talk a little bit about our electronic tolling technology and data contracts, because we are bringing to you today for consideration a sole source, and we want you to understand kind of the larger picture that that takes place in. It's a data service, but we'll get to that at the end. Just moving on, the work plan update. This reflects, it's all the same main topics that we've had all the way along. The language underneath of those and those bullets has been updated a little bit as we've evolved in our thinking as a committee. The first one there is implementing the 30-day notices, which we do have an update on, and that's just letting everybody know. So our notices today, as you might recall, have shorter time frames, 14 and 21 days, that people have to get back to us with the payment. We're working on making it to 30 days possible across the board, and we're working through the last of the technology testing for it, and we've submitted the language to JCAR to make the change that we need.
And this is a continuation of our last meeting, our discussion and decision to go forward with these longer times.
It is. This is at the direction of the committee, and we're excited about it. I continue to believe, I think what we had all confirmed during that meeting, which is it will be a huge benefit to our customers who find themselves rushing around to collect and open their mail and pay us in time.
Shauna, the JCAR status, the language has been submitted to JCAR?
Okay. Correct. And we hope to post it. We think that if JCAR, if all goes well, JCAR will be willing to work with us to post it for a 45-day period in the next few weeks.
In the next what?
Few weeks. Okay. That's what we think. It's hard to know exactly. I mean, it's a different committee, but
right. Okay.
We'll talk a little bit about the settlement guidelines. We'll talk a little bit about the two-year look back. We'll talk about the fleet. And the feedback transponders, which we aren't going to discuss explicitly. If anybody has questions, you're welcome to let me know. They continue to be tested by the EasyPass group vendor, Catch. We would love to get our hands on some to test them. We did just get our hands on their new readers. The readers are the piece of lane technology that has to sit there and read the transponders as they go through. So we did get the new readers, and we're testing them ourselves. So, violations framework, settlement guidance. This committee asked us in January, please consider what else we could do besides just the 30 days and the notices that that we all decided to try to make possible for our customers, to give our customers more time, but also try to see if there are situations that we could be a little more forgiving about, because we do have to assume that most people, most of the time, are trying to be good drivers and pay us. We have settlement guidelines. They're board approved. They're published. They're on our website, and we refer to them and use them all the time. The settlement guidelines are used by our customer service representatives to extend settlements that are within standard parameters, mostly to our IPAS customers. So our parameters, just to remind everybody that we currently use are listed here. All or at least most of the fines are removed for IPAS customers in good standing, regardless of how far they've gotten through the collections process. If you're not an IPAS customer, only the $50 fines can be removed, and you have to get to us before the debt goes to collections. We will review disputes and process those at any point. And we do consider what have been called in the past hardships, but they're non-standard settlement requests. Very odd scenarios, many of them financial, where people provide us documentation, write up their concerns and needs, and we do review those and extend settlements accordingly. So when we did talk about trying to add more flexibility or expand maybe the scope of what we're able to offer people, we had to consider a few things. You can really only have standard settlements, things that everybody could just do because the guidelines allow you. If there's really a common customer concern, like a category of concern that you can identify, something that's measurable, something that you can document, and if the impact is revenue neutral, because I think as we discussed in January, there was one settlement that we all considered might work really well, which is letting somebody become an IPAS member if they're a first-time violator and then extending a settlement to them, and it turned out to have a very deep revenue impact. So all of these, again, would be considered. Now, in our internal discussions with, and David, please feel free to weigh in.
I will.
Attorney General's office. We've come up with some additional categories that we think might be helpful and we think could be standardized. Depending on what this committee thinks, and then of course maybe taking it to the board to put into formal guidelines if we did want to do that. The first would be IPAS settlements for qualifying customers, even if the court-determined bankruptcy settlement amounts are higher. So sometimes we have a number of bankruptcies that come to us. We put the debt on hold, and then as people are paying off their debt within a within the confines of a bankruptcy, it sometimes occurs to everyone involved that an IPAS settlement is actually lower than what the court's mandating they pay in bankruptcy. And these are IPAS customers. So we would like the capacity to just let them have the IPAS settlement.
So these individuals would have been able to settle but for the hold that they had placed
correct.
On in bankruptcy.
Correct.
So basically we're giving back that right.
Just so that I understand this, and I think what we're saying is, all things considered equal, but for the fact that they declare bankruptcy and have these other issues, we've let under the current standards that holds up the process. We would allow them to have the settlement. Now we're just affording them the opportunity to have exactly what we would have given them up for that.
And so the procedural wrinkle that enters the discussion is, of course, just take a hypothetical debtor in bankruptcy who's now got a court order saying you will pay 20% of your every debt.
Right.
Our IPAS settlement, the numbers may work out where it's 5% of this particular debt they have. And those matters conflict. The problem is we now have a court overseeing this whole thing. And so something doesn't quite compute. So it typically may require an additional communication from the tollway to the court explaining that we're fine, but you can see how it can throw a process off, especially in a consumer, an individual bankruptcy. Nothing insurmountable, but it'll certainly put some twists in process.
David, doesn't that really cast that burden upon the debtor versus, we place it out there, and then the question is whether or not they're complying with the order. If we provide them with documentation that we're good with it.
And that's exactly right. That's the documentation. And the court's interest would be making sure that, hey, why is this particular creditor getting 5 cents on the dollar when the rest of yours are getting 10 or 20? And there's just some squaring up to do. So some communication will have to be made to the court to let this court know everything's okay.
Okay.
And we just haven't done that traditionally because we've followed along with the bankruptcy process.
Another item that has been discussed internally actually harkens back to a previous practice that the tollway had, but hasn't had in a few years. And that is the government organizations would pay the cash rate of tolls only. Government organizations do have, of all levels, federal, state, local, small municipalities, you name it. They have large fleets on the system, and they are all IPAS customers. And they do have transponders, and they do register their plates, but they don't do necessarily a wonderful job of keeping all of it up to date. So they sometimes accumulate violations, and in the bureaucratic world that they operate in, it takes them a while to package all those violations and to call us. And by the time they've done that, it's often a little too late for them to get much of a settlement. So the idea is that we would consider letting them pay the cash rate of the tolls only when this happens.
How many
government?
Yeah.
I mean, we'd have to go and analyze the data. We have huge government fleets on our system, 300 miles of tollway or roundabout. It's
based on the original criteria that we talked about, as far as trying to do something that remains essentially revenue neutral.
This would, in a weird way, be revenue neutral, which is why it's on here. In part because many of these governments can't seem to get approval to pay fines. So, what happens?
An interesting way to proceed.
It's one of those unfortunate intergovernmental challenges. And it would actually probably just help us open the revenue door, let other governments close out their debt with us and let us collect versus let us watch piles grow because they can't even get approval to pay.
Is it they can't get approval or is it a timing issue?
A little different. Well, the timing issue is why they accumulated to begin with. It takes them longer to get mail, it takes them longer to figure out what to do with it and then to put together all the requisitions they need to cut a check or whatever. But what we have heard is that some of these government organizations, and there are hundreds of all different sizes, they can't necessarily get approval to cut checks when there are fines involved. So it's something to consider. Obviously, we can, we can maybe bring more analysis or whatever it might be, but it's something that would much more likely open the door for revenue than anything else.
Well, I think it's the right way to go. I think it captures the spirit of what we're trying to do here in that it's a cooperative effort to try and get past this. From our standpoint, the longer these things linger, that means more time and effort that we're expending on this inside these four walls or, within our system. To do that, I mean, I recognize that. My only issue was I wanted to make sure that it wasn't so vast that there were so many that we had to deal with that we had this other issue. But as long as it falls within this criteria, I think we're moving in the right direction. And this essentially gets us to where what the committee had originally talked about when we gave it the directive. So I appreciate that.
I agree.
The third item there is one that we hear a lot about, and it would be revenue neutral, and it is something that's measurable and documentable, and I'll be curious to hear what people think about it. And that is, we often hear from people who are first-time violators who say to us, but I'm a senior citizen, and I didn't quite understand the open road tolling, and I didn't mean to do it. I think there could be mixed feelings about this, but we wanted to put it out there because we hear it very frequently.
If I might, how did we pick 65?
It's documentable. It's just, you're right, we could pick anything. You can see an age on a driver's license.
And it was just, I mean, I know that from our prior discussions that these are based off common issues that have been raised or that are brought up to us in the reconciliation process.
Yeah. And when things escalate to us, when we hear about things in the press, this is often something we hear.
And so does 65, did we find that that was, that was kind of the...
That is just a number that we chose.
But that's a number that we think will have revenue neutral impact.
That is true. I mean, if you set it at 50, a larger number of people would fall into that. Instead of 40, so you're right. 65 is a segment of drivers that is not huge, and it is kind of a traditional line of the
senior citizens.
Mm-hmm. It's like a traditional definition.
What other, if any, definable, I mean, we have age here. Were there any others, definable criteria that you were able to identify that kind of got weeded out in this process or that were?
One of the things that we hear the most about are people who consider themselves first-time violators, which we would love to deal with. And we did address this essentially in that January meeting when we talked about making them MyPass customers. Because we don't have people who violate, we have license plates to violate. I mean, our data point is a license plate. We don't really know the people or the company. We know the license plate. And and license plates change. People buy new cars, they get new registrations, whatever it might be. So we see hundreds, if not thousands, of new license plates on our road every single day, and always have and always will. So identifying a first-time violator is something we would love to do, but it's virtually impossible.
How do you capture it?
And so, to go back to the 65, it's based on to whom the license is registered?
The registered owner of the vehicle is the one responsible for any violation, regardless of whether or not they're driving the vehicle.
And is it, if it's a couple, either? Are 65
whoever the
over
registered
65?
Owner is, and if there's multiple registered owners, one of them would have to meet this. I agree, it's kind of an odd one.
I mean, I recognize the situation, and I can appreciate the how we, that this has been an issue that we've had, that we've dealt with, that, you know, I've seen as people raise these. I think it spans, you know, a bigger area. I think this is a little bit, I know that we have to define it. I guess just getting to the definition, that's always the hard part, right?
And I think it's obviously we're not going to vote today because it's not posted on the agenda as a voting topic, and it should be, at least as we have in the past, a full board vote. But, you know, to the extent that the committee would like to make recommendations or consider it, or consider other things, it would be maybe helpful or something we could discuss next time and then formally take it. The last point was just other unique, well-documented situations. This is for the true outliers, where they come to us and it's not a financial problem, but it's some other very bizarre scenario, which we do write up and we do take to the Attorney General and talk about, you know, the staff time involved or what, you know, what the chances are of actually going to some sort of legal dispute over X, Y, or Z. And that's where we do make one-off arrangements for settlement.
And kind of that umbrella, that overarching language that is specific enough to get us past the first criteria that we had of making them measurable, definable.
I think the kinds of situations, knowing a bit from Shauna what she probably has in mind, we may not call them all one-offs, but they, in many ways, boy, you just haven't heard this scenario before, or this is a type of scenario that is so rare, or you start seeing a repeat of certain scenarios.
Then you start pulling
it. You know, what we're trying to do, and the board should understand, is bring a real level of pragmatism, and we've been doing that for a while, and we're going to continue to. A lot of these are judgment calls, but I think Shauna hit on something that we want to continue to stress, which is when a matter, let's call it a $50 matter, a $150 matter, when it starts to take up so much bandwidth of their unit, at some point you have to say, from the general counseling of the client here, we just can't allow that. So we've tried to bring that to the table, Shauna, with your team, a lot more, I think, of late, and we're going to continue to.
And so, then, of these four criteria that we've had, that we have set out as bullet points, that last one then really does provide a lot of the flexibility, I think, that
and we
kind
work
of
together on it.
Yeah, we do.
And one example where we've had to use that are situations where the registered owner has a disability that interferes with their capacity to work with us on a settlement. I know that sounds odd, but for whatever reason, they can't necessarily get their mail or read it fast enough or understand who to call or have a conversation that is productive on the phone, whatever it might be. And that, those have been several examples where it's not clear until you have the discussions with the customer that you need to deal with it in a different way. It's not a standard case.
And basically, this just affords our staff the opportunity to proceed forward with those settlements without.
Right, and allow that person who has perhaps, or it seems to have, the disability, allow them to close out their debt so they're not carrying it, allow us to close out the debt so that we're not carrying it.
Okay. Well,
so that's an example of one of those unique, and we document it in that we write it up, situations.
I mean, I, you know, from my perspective, I think that's what we were looking for. We're trying to interject a little common sense into, you know, some of these processes where I think our hands were tied before and we weren't allowed to do that. You know, I'm comfortable with this. I think that in totality, I think that fourth point, I think, really gets us to where we need to be. And as long as that passes legal muster and we're happy with it, I'm comfortable with it. I don't know, Carl, if you have
my concern, the legal matter. If that's much of a legal, it's fine. thank you. I will note, Justin, I think you guys have already hit on it, with respect to these four bullets, you know, I'm fine seeing the third one on here. I will say, we, you know, the jury is still out for us on if that one gets serious consideration to pursue as it's written there. That one is,
that's
can require
not,
some
that
additional.
That would never be a standard one. That's just something
understood,
we
understood. But just so that the team here is aware, I know it's showing itself in the document, but we have not weighed in at this point to say, you know, go forward with that one.
And you haven't. So, so moving on from this point, let's obviously this would then go to the full board of directors for review and consideration and approval. At this point, you're looking for just the general consensus from this committee to go forward and then allow David and his staff to start really ironing out the language of the policy that would then come back before the committee?
I think that's right. And to David's point, the first three items are the items that could be standardized most likely into settlement guidelines. The fourth item is what we've been able to establish and can continue working on when we have unique cases.
Yeah, I'd like to see the see it move forward, you know, with this, and we can start taking a look at the language, and then, you know, for a real devil, I guess, is in the details, and we can start working that out.
Well, thank you.
Good.
I think everything we can do to just improve the customer experience, even on a margin like this, helps. The next item is just really teeing up a discussion for the next time that we gather in a meeting, and that is the two-year look back. We've talked about it a lot. Right now, we send a violation notice when somebody gets their third violation in the time frame of 2 years, and that was somewhat arbitrary. We were the first major tolling system to do open road tolling at the volume that we were doing it. And we were trying to come up at the time, many years ago, with some way to bundle violations. So you're not just sending one and then the next. You usually have more than one. So now it's time to reconsider that, because we know a little bit more and we have a lot of data. So we'd like to, at least next time, bring for consideration some analysis about other ways to bundle. The goal is to balance kind of rapid notification of people so that they don't feel like they're being hit, you know, months, years later, but also with the costs that it takes to print, to mail, to do the customer service around it. Every tollway is looking for the perfect balance, and I don't know if any tollway has achieved it, but we certainly have a ton of data that we can work with and talk through.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that, I mean, my experience is that I think once anybody gets any notice, I'm not sure that you're really going to make them happy with the amount of time that you gave them. Either number one, they want more time and to spread it out, or less time and they should have known sooner. That's part of the process. I appreciate that. And, you know, we've talked about kind of the shock that some people get in that 2 year look back. Well, you know, this was almost 23 months ago or whatever, and that does seem a bit difficult. So, you know, I look forward to seeing what you guys kind of come up with as you do the evaluation of those numbers.
I'm really interested too. This is should be a very interesting analysis.
Are there particular data points that the committee wants, or
that's a good question?
Particular breakdowns that you'd like to see?
Well, I guess my first thought is going to be, as we come into different proposals, whatever they may be, as far as what's usable and appropriate based on staff numbers, the percentages that we capture based on our current experiences. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how significant of a change or deviation it is from the current policy, I think, is going to be the
sort of economic impact. Our experiences and be able to recover mm-hmm. sort of those kind of things.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and right now, if somebody doesn't receive a third violation in 2 years, they don't get a notice from us.
Right.
And those violations age out. So although that's hardly anybody, the data will almost certainly reflect that there are a portion, there are some people that fall into that.
You think we should send them a card? And just, you're welcome.
You're welcome. I think that's a great idea. Just a little postcard. Two words, you're welcome. Like how you think. All right, well, I just realized I have a clicker here, so my apologies to whoever's been clicking for me. Thank you. Thank you. Here we have a discussion of fleet policy, which we've talked about for a number of months as a committee. And we do have a new person leading our fleet efforts, and this is Tim Browalski, who I'm sure many of you know. We're very lucky to have him on board. And I thought that he could just give a little overview of kind of the quick wins that we've identified, the things that we think we can do quickly for fleets, and then maybe we could talk a little bit as a group about some of the future pilots that might be possible, things that take much longer and are more complex to set up. So, Tim, I don't know if you want to come up to the table and talk through some of these quick wins.
Great. Thank you, Shauna. Good afternoon, directors. Like she said, quickly go over some of the initial actions Business Systems is taking to help better serve our fleet customers. For the first website and literature review and update, we're looking at the language on the website, as well as we have hard copy pamphlets, reviewing them to make sure the messaging is consistent and clear. We're also exploring additional language and sections that can be added to the website that can clarify and further explain any common questions that fleet customers have.
And one of the things, and I'm just going to throw an example out there, of the website and literature review that's underway, one thing that we found that is a point of confusion is we use the words on our website and in our literature, truck and commercial, somewhat interchangeably. Those are actually very different things. There are very different categories of fleets. And this is our big opportunity to maybe make things clearer and to better target types of fleets for you. So just want to throw an example out
there. So to clarify, we would not be limiting ourselves to the trucking industry. We would include other possible fleets.
Some of our biggest fleets are rental car organizations. Some of them are livery. And then even FedEx and UPS have a number of passenger cars that they use. It's not all just trucks.
Along the same lines, one section of the website is about reassigning rental or violations for rental fleets. There's language on there from the Toll Highway Act, almost quoted, and it can be a little confusing for an average, fleet manager. So it's another opportunity where we could clarify.
I will second that. It's confusing to me. I always have to have legal guidance when I read it.
So hopefully, this review clarify, simplify, and standardize the language. The next section, highlighting a fleet-specific email link from the website. This feature will be found on the Contact Us page of the website, and it will be similar to other fleet or topic-specific email links that already exist. This will give customers the option to email fleet staff directly, which will help expedite their customer service needs, as well as minimize the time they would have to call in otherwise. This will also include a frequently asked questions section, and that way we can kind of head off some potential questions. And also provide some common paperwork that fleet customers would otherwise call into the customer service line to receive. This we will continue to monitor once it's implemented and track the demand on it, as well as if we feel it's serving customers well or they're finding it helpful. Next, fleet industry roundtable discussions. This would just be another opportunity to gain feedback on our current customer service practices, further understand common questions and issues fleet customers are having, as well as hear suggestions on how the fleet industry may think we can improve our customer service efforts.
Now, we've had conversations in the past with...
We did. We had a series of focus groups that mostly took place at nights and on weekends. This was about a year and a half ago, and we got great information out of those. A lot of rental car companies participated, but we have heard from other fleet organizations that they would like another opportunity to meet because they couldn't find someone to send in the evenings and on the weekends focus groups. They wanted it to be during business hours. And then various other people who just didn't know about it in time or whatever it might be. So this would be an opportunity to do the outreach that we've been requested by different fleet organizations to do in a way that makes better sense for their schedules.
So we'll hear other voices and possibly reconfirm some of the things that we've heard from other organizations.
And we're especially interested because in the fleet focus groups, we didn't hear as much from trucking organizations as we thought we would, and we think that they might not have been as well represented as we could maybe manage during the business hour context. So that's, you know, we'll capture more voices, and hopefully we'll expand the scope of what we've heard.
Along those lines, some of the organizations we'd like to reach out to request meetings: Midwest Truckers Association, Illinois Trucking Association, there's a Chicago Automobile Trade Association, and also an Illinois Limousine Association, to try to get a round perspective of thoughts and feedback.
And we are reaching out, of course, to Director Darcy and trying to learn a little bit, too, about some of the smaller fleets that are out there, especially in the auto sales industry. See a lot of that.
And so that I just kind of want to understand exactly what the biggest issues are. As I understand it, from car rental companies and kind of fleets of that nature, one of the issues is the reassignment of the responsibility for who has the car at the time. And then from the trucking companies, am I correct in understanding they have a limited number of transponders that they use in multiple vehicles and they're transferring out? Is that primary part of the issue?
It can be. The biggest problem is they just have such a constant churn of vehicles and plates that it's hard for them to do all the inventory of the transponders accordingly and to keep the IPAS accounts updated. And honestly, one thing that we do keep finding is that when there is a fleet manager at an organization of any size, you know, if they have 50 cars, if they have 500 or 5,000, if that is a consistent person and they work with us consistently, everything's fine. They learn the ropes, they know who to call, and everything works great. The problem is that most of these organizations have turnover in personnel, and it's hard for the new people who come in to figure out what to do. So they keep having to relearn. And if we had more standard information available and more standard practices, that wouldn't maybe be the same sort of challenge on their end. So I think we'll hear things like that, because when you bring group managers together, they'll talk about their experiences learning and what they came up against. And hopefully they'll talk to us about their experiences with other tolling organizations. The national fleet organizations work with tollways from coast to coast.
There's also reassignment with trucking companies as well, where a company would own the cab and they lease it out to individual drivers per their leasing agreement, hopefully it says they were responsible for the tolls. So the registered owner of the vehicle would get the violation, and then the company would come to us and say, you know, Joe Smith was driving during this time, here's his leasing agreement, and then we would reassign it to him. It seems very, very manual right now and time-consuming to reassign the violations.
Well, you know, I know we've talked about this, Shauna, and one of the things that, I mean, just, and I'm interested, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse, because I think it's imperative that we go through this process of gauging the interest and the issues that we're going to get from these focus groups. One of the things, just from my perspective, it seems like kind of the wave of where this is heading is, it seems to me like we should be to the point where we, you know, as we go through this new backroom, back office system that we're getting together, whether or not it's to the point where we can have an app that would easily allow, I mean, if they can come in and do this reassignment. And I mean, there's two parts of that. Number one, I'm interested in when these groups get together, whether or not that would deal with some of these issues, and they think that